everyone, and welcome to episode 21 of True Crime All the Time. I'm Mike Ferguson, and with me, as always, is Mike Gibson. Gibby, what is going on?
Hey, Mike. Doing good, man.
Are you?
Yeah. I can't believe it's 21 episodes.
I know. That's crazy, isn't it?
Yeah. That's just...
When you think about from Alton Coleman all the way up to 21 and how many downloads we're getting and how much interaction we're getting, it blows us both away.
Oh, I can't. Yeah. 21 episodes.
It really is. And the interaction. That's the part that really...
I love it, man.
I know you do. People saying that you're a suspect with a K-bar.
Never know.
You know. But again, I know you get a kick out of it.
Yeah.
Hey, folks. If you haven't tried Audible yet, what are you waiting on? You've heard me talk about it for a while now. Audible offers an incredible selection of audiobooks across every genre, from bestsellers to mysteries and thrillers, true crime, and more. Audible is the home of storytelling. You'll discover thousands of podcasts from popular favorites to exclusive new series. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. But members also get full access to a growing selection of included audiobooks, Audible originals, and podcasts, and you can download or stream those included titles all you want. And the Audible app is great. Makes it very easy to listen anytime, anywhere, whether you're traveling, working out, walking the dog, or just doing your chores. Right now, I'm listening to a thriller titled Then She Was Gone by Lisa Jewell. It's absolutely amazing. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/TCAT or text TCAT to 500-500. That's audible.com/TCATT or text TCAT to 500-500. So we got to give some shout outs. We got a bunch of new Patreon supporters, which is awesome.
Love that.
So shout out to Jennifer Richard, Jordan, no last name, Jordan Lemons, which was one of our very first supporters. Yeah. Actually did our first hometown listener episode. We love Jordan. She's been with us.
Yeah, she's a good friend.
Yeah, been with us from the very beginning.
So Jennifer, Jordan, and Jordan.
Yep. That's Catherine cool. Clark. Okay. And you, Jeanette Craig.
And Jeanette. Wow, that's like four J's and a K.
How about that?
See?
But again, thank you so much to everybody. And
appreciate it.
As we always say, we appreciate not only our new Patreon supporters, but the people that keep supporting us. It really means so much to us. It's hard for me to even express how much it means. You know, as always, visit our website at truecrimeallthetime.com. Find all of our contact information. You know, follow us on our Facebook page, Twitter, Instagram. You'll find all that on there. Click on the merchandise tab. I got some new stickers that are coming. I got a lot of requests for stickers. And that's one thing I never thought about when I was placing orders for the newer website, which is stuff that I actually ordered, not the Zazzle, but the newer one.
Right.
And for some reason, stickers just never crossed my mind, but tons of people, I guess, like to get stickers for the different podcasts that they listen to.
Okay.
So I ordered a bunch of those. They should be up probably sometime next week. So look for those if you're one of those people that like stickers.
Yeah.
And a lot of people do.
Sounds like there's a lot of people that do.
Yep. And if you get one, take a picture of it, put it on Twitter, put it on Facebook. Yeah. We love that kind of stuff.
And whoever gets the first True Crime All the Time tattoo, I'll send you stickers for free.
Do not tell people to tattoo themselves. So if anybody wants to support us on Patreon, you can do that easily by going to patreon.com/truecrimeallthetime. And don't forget to check out our other podcast, True Crime All the Time Unsolved. At this very moment, there's a new episode dropping, which is on the tube sock killer.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah, it's very fascinating. So after you listen to this episode, jump over, check out the tube sock killer on True Crime All the Time Unsolved. All right, Gibbs, you ready to get into this?
I'm ready.
It was a slow Saturday night, and it's out.
All right, short clip, I know, but that is Jerome Brudos, Jerry. We're going to call him Jerry.
Jerry.
His mama named him Jerome, but I'm going to call him Jerry.
Right.
I would have loved to have found more, but found this little clip, and basically what it is, it's Jerome Jerry Brudos being interviewed by a reporter.
Yeah.
And the reporter asks him, you know, about his murders. Basically, why did you do the things that you did, which is what we're going to get into. And Jerry says that it was a slow Saturday night.
Just a slow Saturday night.
And laughs.
Creepy.
Like, maniacal laugh.
Yeah.
Jerome Jerry Brudos was also known as what, Gibbs?
The Lust Killer.
The Lust Killer.
Yeah, and the Shoe Fetish Slayer.
I like that one, the Shoe Fetish Slayer, which I actually I think is more...
Yeah, that's more of his calling, don't you think?
Yeah, I think it's more descriptive of him.
Yes.
But again, we talk about it, right? Every serial killer has to have a nickname. I don't know why.
Yeah.
You know, we like to give people nicknames like in this Gibby. Country. Gibby. So like we always like to do, let's start early life. And Jerry Brudos was born on January 31st, 1939 in Webster, South Dakota. He was the second son of Henry and Eileen. And he had an older brother whose name was Larry. Now, one thing, Gibbs, that I saw was it was mentioned that Jerry was an accidental birth.
Yeah, I've seen that.
And his parents, even with the accidental birth, I don't think they were trying to have him.
Right.
But when they found out that Eileen was pregnant, they really wanted a daughter.
Yeah.
And this would kind of shape some of what Jerry becomes.
Sure. Someone first didn't want you, and then when they did have you, they weren't happy with how you came out. Which is strange because his dad owned a huge farm, if I remember right. Right.
Yeah.
So you would think you'd, back in those days, you'd want as many boys as you can.
1939 in South Dakota, you'd think you'd want some farm hands.
That's exactly right.
So that was pretty strange. But like we said, and I think it was a lot of it was his mother. She was very upset that she had a son and not a girl. And she was constantly belittling Jerry, abused him, just didn't treat him very well at all. And I think a lot of it stemmed from the fact that, again, she wasn't happy with how he came out, I guess. I don't know if that's the right term, but, you know, the family would move a number of times, mostly stayed in the Pacific Northwest. And at some point early, you know, in his childhood, they ended up settling in Salem, Oregon.
Jerome Brudos was born to a woman who really wanted a girl. Now, we always hear about families or fathers who say, I really want a boy. But to imagine a mother who says, I really want a girl. I don't want a boy.
How a boy and later a man is treated by his first relationship with a woman, his mother, is very important. If he felt that he was sort of abandoned by her and simultaneously that she almost had a lot of anger towards him for even having been born, there can definitely be a feeling that of some type of backlash.
I think this one's important because what she touches on in the fact of how somebody, and let's say a man's first interaction with a female figure, who in this case is his mother,
right,
has a big effect.
Sure.
On how this person treats women later in life.
I agree.
And you can go back, you can look at Ed Gein, you can look at a whole host of people.
Tommy Lynn Sells.
Yeah, so Tommy Lynn Sells, right? That was a recent episode.
Right.
Just another case. So one thing about Jerry is, and it's central, you know, to this whole episode, he becomes fascinated with women's high-heeled shoes from a very early age.
Very early.
You know, at one point, he found a pair of high-heeled shoes in a junkyard while he was walking, and he put them on and he wore them home. And that didn't go over well with his mom.
That's a weird thing for a kid to find in a junkyard. And for a boy, I would think, to find a high-heeled pair of shoes and that's what he wanted to keep. I find it strange.
Well, yeah. So his mom scolded him. You know, I don't know if she beat him, but she was on him big time about wearing these shoes. And she went to the point of even burning them in front of him.
That's a little extreme.
5-year-old Jerome Brutus, he finds this pair of women's shoes. Something had made him pick those up rather than looking for a dump truck or a toy tractor to play with. So he brings home this pair of women's shoes and he begins to wear them around the house. The shoes became taboo, and her reaction to the shoes, he didn't understand why she was so adamant that he shouldn't have those. And she berated him emotionally. So he kept those shoes. She was really out of control, burning the shoes in front of him.
In his case, he gets this message from his mom, a very strong disapproval that this is wrong, that this is nasty, it's dirty, and he's not to be doing it.
That fueled the flame of his anger to the point where that's probably when he really started feeling powerless and vulnerable. And that, combined with anger and frustration, can lead to a path of destruction later on down the line.
He started to associate that sexual arousal with that aggressiveness, with the forbidden aspect of the shoes, and that blossomed into this very strong fetish.
To me, that's fascinating because we're really getting in to the crux of how he starts to go down the path that he does. Sure. And again, we're talking very young.
Yeah.
Right. 5, 6
yeah.
years old.
Right. I mean, what is that? Kindergarten, first grade?
So at this early age, he's starting to put violence and arousal together, getting aroused by the violence. And that's going to show up, in the case as we move along. So like we said, Gibbs, we're talking first grade, and he steals a pair of high heel shoes from his first grade teacher.
Okay.
So he's got a teacher who loves to wear high heels, and for some reason she kept multiple pairs in the classroom. And at one point he steals one of the extra pairs.
So he's fascinated enough to snatch a pair up.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
He wants to take them home. And one of his classmates tells on him and he's forced to confess, and his teacher gets angry, and Jerry gets really embarrassed by this and storms out. So again, kind of going back to his mother, it's almost like the same thing. He's being scolded for this fetish. And I don't even know how a 5-6-year-old has a fetish, but maybe, I don't know what else to call it.
I guess it'd be like a kid today that has a fetish, but a need to watch the same show every time they come home from school. They got to do it. Or they have to have, they only eat a hot dog, right? And they won't eat anything else. So this guy.
It's not a fetish at all.
What is that?
I don't know, but neither one of those are fetishes.
Yeah, that's true.
But I get what you're saying.
Yeah.
I really don't. I don't even know why I say I get what you're saying. Because I really don't. So we jump 1 year ahead, and Jerry fails the second grade.
Okay.
And
that happens.
It does happen, but he's got all kinds of weird stuff going on. He's got the measles. He's got swollen glands, laryngitis. And he actually has to have a bunch of operations because he's got some infections.
So some major health issues.
He does have some health issues. Yeah. But it's at this point he's also starts complaining of a lot of headaches. So much so that he says he can't even see a lot of the time.
Oh. It's like migraines.
And at this point, they actually do an IQ test for Jerry. And it comes out to be pretty normal.
Okay.
Which, take that for what it's worth.
Yeah.
But I think it's important information. So we jump to age 8. Jerry and his family moved to a place called Grants Pass, Oregon. And it's in Grants Pass that Jerry has neighbors a couple of teenage girls. So he starts sneaking into their house with the girl's brother and playing with girls' clothes. It's not just high-heeled shoes. And we're going to find this as we go along. It's undergarments, underwear, shoes, and even just plain women's, general women's clothes.
Dresses, whatever.
Yeah.
He's playing with it all.
Yeah. He's got a fascination that will lead to a fetish. And maybe that's the way we should have said it, right? Can a six-year-old have a fetish? Maybe. Or would you call it a fascination?
I'd say fascination.
That is ultimately going to lead to a fetish.
Fetish, yeah.
That's probably a better way to say it. So again, fast forward a little bit. Jerry's going through puberty, 15, 16 years old. And Jerry's doing, now it's a fetish. Because Jerry's doing some of the normal things that boys that age do, right?
Yeah.
And this is where he starts using the shoes and the underwear to aid in doing some of these things. But again, his mom is all over him.
Yeah, she is.
And she's disgusted by anything that has to do with sexuality or anything along those lines. And she goes as far as making Jerry wash his bed sheets by hand.
Sure.
Because they're all stained.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Again, how much of her doing what she has done in Jerry's childhood?
Oh, she helps create the monster.
Maybe. I mean, I think he had this. This was a pretty strong fascination.
Yeah, but I think she,
she exacerbated it.
Exactly.
I just wanted to use a big word.
Yeah, and there you go.
Thank you.
And I actually knew what it meant.
Hey. So also at this time, Gibbs, this is when Jerry begins to have some bizarre fantasies involving like actually capturing a girl, forcing her to obey his every command, things like that.
Yeah.
Right. So he's starting to slide off the cliff.
Yeah. He's going in a different direction.
Right. And I guess, you know, a lot of people have fetishes. There's nothing wrong with having a fetish.
No, as long as it's healthy.
Yeah. Jerry Brudos takes what could be a normal fetish.
Yeah.
To the nth degree.
Yeah.
Way over the line.
Not healthy and not having someone that wants to cooperate with your fetish.
Right. Exactly. So at this point, the family moves once again and they end up in Corvallis, Oregon. And Jerry just keeps on, you know, with his habit of stealing women's shoes and underwear. And at this point, he's basically just using them to masturbate. And that's what it comes down to. He's using this as a fetish tool to aid in
his masturbation.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. So Gibbs, I think that's Jerry's life from birth up to 16. And now we've got to jump into crimes. Because he starts committing crimes at the age of 16. And the first one involves stealing, you know, the underwear of an 18-year-old girl. But it doesn't end there because he's been doing that all along.
Right.
Right. So now he decides for whatever reason that he's going to ramp up.
Time to notch it up.
And his thought is that he wants a nude picture of this girl to use instead of relying on the underwear in his sexual gratification. So he sets up this very elaborate plot to try to get this girl to pose for a nude picture. Now, I can't imagine that in 1955 time frame that it was very easy to get an 18-year-old girl to pose for a nude picture.
I don't think it would have been easy.
Not that easy to take a picture in 1955.
I think it would have been hard to find a camera.
And then you got to take it to the local.
To get it developed.
You got to get it developed, right? It's not like today.
No.
Where everything's instant.
Right.
Snapchat.
Just got to have your cell phone with you.
I don't even know what half that stuff is. But so the plan that he comes up with is that he asked this girl to come to his house with the understanding that he's going to help her get back her underwear, which he had stolen in the first place, but I guess she doesn't know this. Now, how he knows that it's missing and maybe she told him, I'm a little unclear about that part. So however it happens, this girl does come. And when she gets there, She's basically attacked by a masked man with a knife. The masked man makes her take off her clothes, and he takes several photos of her. The man leaves, the girl gets dressed, and she flees. Now, as she's leaving, she runs into Jerry, who says, "Oh, I just saw the guy. I was locked in the barn, but I saw the guy run off." Now, we know this is like a Scream situation, right?
Yeah.
It sounds exactly like Scream. Like it. Maybe that's where they got it from.
Maybe they did.
But the girl leaves and she tells the police what happened. Now, however he did that, he set it up in a pretty ingenious way. I shouldn't give him credit. Maybe ingenious is not the right word, but
maybe he's trying to be the hero.
Yeah. Obviously he went from being the attacker to being the one that says, "Oh, I'm so sorry. I saw him.
Right. I'm here for you.
I'm here for you. What can I do to help?" Now, a year later, Jerry is able to lure a 17-year-old girl into his car. He drives her to a deserted farmhouse and he beats her. So now he's changing again.
Yeah, his aggression's going up.
Right. You know, before it's been all about stealing, sexual gratification, even the nude photographs, he didn't hurt that girl.
Right.
But now he beats this girl pretty badly. Now there's a couple that stops at the scene of the crime and they notify the police. Now Jerry, again, he has this kind of story where he tells the police that he stopped to help this girl and that he was not the attacker. He was the savior.
Yeah. I was here to help.
Right. Now the couple, I think they knew he wasn't telling the truth because they had either seen him.
They could sense the bullshit.
Yeah. I'm sure.
Yeah.
And it doesn't take the Oregon police, state police very long when they're questioning Jerry and he confesses. Now, because of that, they're able to search his house and car. They find, you know, women's underwear, nude photos, photo equipment, and Jerry ends up getting arrested for assault and battery. Now, what happens to Jerry, though, is that he's committed to the Oregon State Hospital. And the initial diagnosis is adjustment reaction of adolescence with sexual deviation and fetishism. That's a hell of a diagnosis.
Yeah.
But the strange part about it is, so he's hospitalized in this state hospital, but he's allowed to attend high school during the day.
It's kind of strange.
Right. So he's got this initial diagnosis. He's being held because of the assault and battery, but they're like, "But you know what? During the day, go ahead and go to school.
Be around all these women."
Right.
Yeah. And when you're done, come here, eat your dinner, and go to bed.
Yeah, I just didn't get that at all. The other thing is, eventually they do diagnose him as borderline schizophrenic.
Not surprised.
But that, I think that was a very common diagnosis back then.
A lot of people were probably just thrown into that.
Yes.
That was an easy
I think that fix. Was like a catch-all.
Yeah.
When they weren't sure exactly what was going on with you.
Right.
Oh, you're borderline schizophrenic.
Right.
Now, Jerry wasn't there. I mean, this was not a short-term thing. He was there for 8 or 9 months.
Yeah, it's a long time.
Hospitalized, but allowed to go to school. And eventually, they let him go and say that he's not a danger to society. Now, after he's released, he goes back. He graduates high school, but his GPA is very, very low.
Yeah, so he's not the brightest one based off GPA.
Based off GPA. I don't know how much of that has to do with the fact that he was in a mental hospital and attending school.
Yeah, that could have made a difference on his test scores and all that back then.
Is he studying at night while he's at the mental hospital?
Yeah.
I'm not sure.
I'm not sure how much studying you get done.
You know, springtime is all about fresh air, fresh starts, and freshly cleaned homes. And it's the perfect time to give a fresh look at Simply Safe Home Security, the only home security system I use and recommend. Springtime also means more time outside and away from home. And I trust Simply Safe. I love the myriad of features that they offer. And I love the price. Simply Safe was named Best Home Security Systems for 2024 by U.S. News & World Report. The system blankets your whole home in protection. detection. There are so many sensors, from detecting break-ins, fires, floods, and more. Plus, they have a variety of indoor and outdoor cameras to keep watch over your property day and night. It's backed by 24/7 professional monitoring for less than $1 a day. So you get fast emergency response and dispatch when you need it most. There's no contract, and they have a 60-day money-back guarantee. So you can try SimpliSafe risk-free. Don't absolutely love it? Send the system back for a full refund. SimpliSafe has given Gibby and I and many of our listeners real peace of mind. We want you to have it too. Get 20% off any new SimpliSafe system when you sign up for Fast Protect monitoring. Just visit simplisafe.com/TCAT. That's simplisafe.com/TCATT. There's no safe like SimpliSafe. True Crime All the Time is sponsored by BetterHelp. I want to ask everybody one question. How is your social battery right now? Does it have a ton of energy, or are you drained? And why is it at that level? You know, it can be easy to ignore our social battery and spread ourselves thin. What's the right amount of socializing for you, and how do you recharge? You know, maybe you're the type of person who thrives around people, or maybe you need some more alone time. Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. I think therapy is a very powerful tool for learning positive coping skills and helping to empower you to be the best version of yourself. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. No more hopping in the car, driving, and sitting in a waiting room. You can do your entire session from the comfort of your own home. All you have to do is fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and you can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/TCAT today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/TCATT. So Gibbs, we jumped to 1959. Jerry Brudos is 20 years old and he joins the Army.
Yeah.
Now, you and I have done a number of episodes, 21 on this to be exact. We just talked about it. How many of them of these serial killers were in the armed forces?
Majority.
A lot.
Yeah.
The vast majority.
Yeah.
I don't want to disparage the armed forces at all. So I'm not saying it that way. I just don't know, you know, how much of it has to do with the times, right? The 50s and the 60s.
I would say it's the times, because back in those years, I think that was the fix-all. Right. If you weren't fitting in, not for everybody, I'm just saying there was a handful of people that they would just, if you weren't fitting in with the community the way you should have, if your grades weren't where you should have been, if you didn't go off to college, then you were pushed off and your parents pushed you off into the services.
Or
you had your calling, right? You got drafted,
yeah.
You know, depending on what time, what year it was.
Right. But I think there's something to that. I think, and he did go to college, right, for a little bit?
For a little bit, and some vocational school, too.
But didn't do well.
Didn't do well.
And dropped out. So yeah. I do like your hypothesis, which is, you know, he had tried some different things. He wasn't finding his path. And a lot of people say, well, you know, I'm going to join the Army. There's structure there. There's something for me to, you know, that's a path for me to go down.
Sure.
But I just, you know, we do talk about it and I find it interesting. I don't know that it means anything. It's just interesting that a number of these serial killers were in either the Army or some branch of the armed services. But again, things don't go well for him there either.
No.
He's having a hard time basically fitting in anywhere at this point. Because he only makes it, I think, 6 or 7 months in the Army. And at one point, you know, he's discharged for what was called bizarre obsessions.
Yeah, that was, I mean.
But he went to go see the Army psychiatrist.
Right.
And I'm sure it probably didn't take him too long to figure out that this guy's got something going on.
Yeah, he's not stable.
I would have loved to have been a fly on that wall.
to hear that conversation between the Army psychiatrist and Jerry Brudos.
Back in 1959, they wouldn't have even been able to run it out of them. You know, that's what they did back then. If you were
trying to run it.
Yeah. If you were discipline issues or something they didn't like, they would just
exercise you,
run it out of you, thinking that they could, you know, just get you changed. But
yeah, you're not going to run this out of Jerry Brudos.
No.
Bizarre obsessions. No,
unless you're in high heels in front of them.
Yeah. That would just make it worse.
So he gets released from the Army. He moves back home and his mom doesn't let him stay in the house. So he has to stay out in one of the sheds on the property.
He was really loved.
Yeah, yeah.
By his mom.
He was feeling the love. So I don't know what this shed looked like and how housewarming it was, but I can't imagine it being great. But during this time, he comes across a young girl and he follows her home. And he comes up behind her and he basically strangles her till she passes out. Doesn't kill her, but she passes out. Once she passes out, he steals her shoes, takes him home back to his shed, and sleeps with him every night because it makes him feel
safe,
and like he's a stronger, powerful person.
Yeah, that's something.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, at least he didn't kill her. I guess it's the only thing
that's the only good thing.
The only good thing I can say about that. I mean, I'm sure she was scarred for life.
Yeah, I would think.
Having gone through that. So let's jump up to 62, because this is when the next important thing in Jerry's life happens. At this point, he's working at a radio station, and he meets and marries a 17-year-old girl named Darcy. And they would go on to have two children, and they ended up settling in Salem, Oregon. Now, there are some strange things that came out about the relationship between Jerry and Darcy.
Mm-hmm.
One of the weirdest things is that early on, like honeymoon stage type stuff, he's asking Darcy to do all of the housework naked, except for only a pair of high heels. And he would sit around just taking pictures of her.
Yeah.
But at this time, Gibbs, this is when the headaches and the migraines come back into the picture. And maybe even some blackouts, he would say. At this point, he starts having what he calls blackouts. Now, again, a lot of this comes from him later in life, right? And we always say that you have to take some of this with a grain of salt. But his comment was that the only way to relieve his symptoms was to go out at night on these, what he would call raids.
Right.
You know, stealing shoes and underwear. And lacy garments, the whole nine yards.
You know, I think back in that time, it was probably a little bit easier to steal some undergarments because people didn't really have dryers. So a lot of things were hung out to dry. So I'm guessing it might have been a little easier just to walk past the clothesline and.
I think that's a great point. Because as far as I know, he's not breaking into people's houses.
Yeah. So I'm thinking he's just strolling through the neighborhood, grabbing what's on the clotheslines and.
Now, I don't know how he's getting the shoes, though.
No, I'm not sure about that either.
Maybe he is having to break into
to
some houses because people don't leave their shoes out.
But this is early 1960s, so.
Most houses probably weren't even locked.
Yeah,
you're right about that. We kind of have to take like 62 to 67. You know, there's a five-year period here where he's a little quiet, at least when it comes to committing serious crimes.
Yeah. Well, he had a daughter, right?
Yeah, he did have a daughter. But I don't think he ever stops the stealing of shoes and underwear and women's clothing and things like that. But at this point, he starts dressing in drag. And
there's a change.
Yeah, so that's a little bit of a change here. And sometimes he would even wear women's underwear and women's clothing under his own clothes. So whatever that feeling, it gave him some type of feeling to do that. And as you said, this is when his second child is born. Now, what's really interesting is what's going on with his relationship with his wife.
Yeah, it's changing.
it is changing, because to the point where she won't even let him in the room when the child is born.
Yeah.
So obviously something's not going right.
No. If you don't want your husband in the room with you.
Something. Yeah. She knows something. Now, Jerry would say later that this really upset him. Because of this, now, like I said, he claims because of what happened, he ends up stalking another woman, following her home. And in the stalking period, he's waiting for her to fall asleep.
Right.
He breaks into her house and he's trying to steal her shoes, but she wakes up.
Big mistake.
Yeah. And Jerry ends up choking her, doesn't kill her again, chokes her till she passes out. But he rapes this woman.
Yes.
So again, he's...
I mean, it's escalating.
It's escalating.
Yeah,
yeah. That's sure. The word I was looking for. He does end up stealing her shoes, and he flees the scene. Now, this one for me is a little different, because it's almost like he wanted to steal the shoes of somebody that he coveted, targeted.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? He's not going into a random house and stealing a random person's shoes or underwear.
No, he's stalking.
He saw somebody.
Yeah.
And he wanted that specific person's shoes.
Sure.
So, I mean, that's telling me something. But like we mentioned, things are starting to escalate. And it's really, you know, not very long where we get into Jerry's first murder. So, Gibbs, we're at January 26th, 1968. And a woman named Linda Slauson is going door to door selling encyclopedias. There's going to be a whole ton of people listening to this that don't even know what an encyclopedia is.
Yeah. It was the iPhone of the day.
It was the only thing you had.
It was Google.
Remember back in the day? I mean, if you did a book report,
you had to have encyclopedia.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you better get to the library before somebody in your class got
the H
that you needed, right?
That's funny. It's not funny because about what's about to happen.
But. Right.
So she's going door to door. Big mistake, because she reaches Jerry's house. And Jerry convinces her to come in and go to his workshop, which was like in his garage, I think.
So tip one, if someone wants you to go to their workshop, don't go to their workshop.
No. But I assume he's doing this on the pretense that she's going to make a sale, sure. Right? He's going to buy.
My money's in my workshop. Come on down.
Something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But very quickly he turns and he hits her with a 2x4. And then he strangles her, kills her.
Mm-hmm.
But he doesn't just do that. You know, he removes her clothes and he dresses her with some of his own collection.
Which is weird.
It's very strange. Yeah. She's already wearing clothes.
It's like a live, well, not a live, but a dead
like
grown-up doll.
Like a doll. Yeah. Like he's changing a doll's clothes almost is like what he's doing.
Yeah, it's weird. But it gets... For me, it gets weirder.
Oh, much weirder. Because he ends up cutting off her left foot and puts it into one of his high-heeled shoes.
Right.
And then he puts the whole thing in the freezer.
Strange.
Because my assumption is this is a trophy.
Oh, yeah.
And he's going to keep this and he's going to use this to do, you know, his thing.
Right.
Over and over.
Yep.
And that's it's something we've talked about with serial killers is trophies, right? That's a big part of some serial killers. They like to take trophies so that they can relive the feeling or the whatever sexual gratification they got during the act. My assumption is it floods back into them,
right,
as he's holding this leg with a high heel shoe on it.
Bizarre, but yeah, it's his turn on machine there.
Yeah.
And he'll do what he has to do and move on.
And he puts it back in the freezer until he needs it again.
Right.
Now, I don't know what happens if his wife needs to get, a pound of hamburger.
Yeah.
She's
just
gonna
slide
see
it over out of the way.
What the hell's this leg and this high heel doing in here?
Old Jerry, he's at it again.
The hallmarks of psychopathy are this lack of empathy, a sense of entitlement, narcissism. Most serial killers are psychopaths. It is the personality disorder that allows them to commit a homicide and come up and deal with their family as if nothing's happened.
He took a hacksaw and cut off one of her feet. He saved that as a trophy, put it in the freezer that he had, periodically took it out. It was a fetish item, and put a female shoe on it, masturbated, got sexual arousal from it.
All right, so some of the things that we said. Again, what I find interesting is the comment about the separation of the family life and the serial killer life.
Yeah.
You know, one minute he's chopping off a woman's leg, putting a shoe on it, putting it in the freezer, and then basically he's walking upstairs to have dinner with his family.
Yeah, eating dinner with his wife and kids like nothing. Normal right. day at the office, honey.
So that is the, you know, where they're talking about the whole psychopathy.
Yeah.
No empathy, but also no bad emotions.
Right.
There's nothing causing them to feel bad about it. Again, that's his first murder. But there were a couple of people or women that go missing later on in 1968. Stephanie Vico. She's reported missing out of Portland, and Jan Whitney was 23 years old. She was going to the University of Oregon. She's reported missing.
Yeah. And I think it's important too, you know, the previous ones, he says he threw them in the river. This is a kind of his thing. He dumps them in the bodies of water.
Well, and I think if I remember correctly, he even went as far as faking a flat tire on the bridge so that he could throw the body over the bridge into the water.
That's a good way to do it.
So it actually is. I mean, again, we hate to tell people how to do things, but
if you're going
to
throw a body into the river,
if a cop comes up and asks you what you're doing there, yeah,
better have out your jack and your wrench.
Yeah. You better have an alibi for sure. So they find Jan Whitney's car at a rest stop on Interstate 5. So Jerry's next victim is Karen Sprinker, and she was also a student. She was going to Oregon State, 19 years old at the time, and she was slated to meet her mom for lunch at a department store in downtown Salem, and she never showed up. Now, her car would be found as well, locked and abandoned, on the store's rooftop sometime later. But again, no trace of Karen. Now, the one thing that's different about this case or this incident is that there were two young girls that were able to tell police that they had witnessed a large man dressed in drag on that parking garage rooftop where Karen's car was ultimately found on that day.
Here's a sign.
All right, Gibbs. So April of 1969, so that was March. Karen was in March. Now we're just 1 month later, and this is where Jerry starts to ramp up at an incredible pace.
Yeah.
And again, I'm not really sure. I never was able to put it together of what was going on or what caused him to increase the frequency the way that he did.
But he kicks it up.
And there had to be something. So on the 21st of April, he runs into a woman named Sharon Wood, again in a parking garage, and at Portland State University. So again,
he's targeting universities.
Yes,
right.
He is
looking for that certain age, I guess.
Yep. So he obviously likes young 20s at this point in his life. That's young 20s. Girls, that's what he's targeting. Now, Sharon is a fighter. And
thank goodness.
To the point where during the attack, she ends up biting Jerry on the hand and drawing blood. But Jerry's a really big guy.
Right.
And he overpowers her, beats her, knocks her unconscious. But at that point, there's a car coming. And this caused him to have to leave and run. But Sharon survives.
Thankfully.
But because of the way everything happened, at this point in time, police aren't able to connect Sharon Wood's attack with some of these other university students.
Right. They just think they have missing students.
But the thought is, and I don't know, you tell me if I'm wrong, he would have killed Sharon Wood.
Oh, I think so.
And by sheer luck, this car happened to come along and scare him off.
Yeah, I mean, she probably felt like she hit the lotto that day because she survived.
Yes. No, I think you're right. And especially after everything comes out and she realizes who this guy was.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, she had to feel incredibly lucky. Like she had somebody sitting on her shoulder.
That day.
Somebody watching over her.
Absolutely.
Because a lot of others were not so lucky.
Yeah.
And we said, you know, he's escalating. And he's escalating to the point where just the next day, he must be frustrated because his attack on Sharon Wood doesn't, you know, go down the way that he wanted it to. And he tries to abduct a 14-year-old by trying to force her into her car.
Yeah.
Now, somehow she's able to get out.
Yeah, she escapes.
She escapes from him, luckily. And so another person that, again, after all this comes out and she probably sees the pictures and knows who this guy was, had to feel like she had somebody watching over.
Right. But he's frustrated, so he just goes down the road not too much further to the middle school. And that's where he tries to abduct somebody else, a girl that's 15 years old. And she screams, you know, he's driving his mom's Volkswagen, Carmen Ghia, which, you know, which back then was kind of a cool car, if I remember right.
Yeah. No, so, I think it was.
So he's driving that around. He tries to pick her up, but luckily for her, you know, she screams, she yells, there's a neighbor in the front yard, and that scares him off, and, you know, he pulls away. So...
good for her. I mean, that's what she should do, right?
Yeah.
She did the best possible thing. Scream, run, yell, yeah. Draw attention.
And when all this breaks loose eventually, you know, because of his picture in the paper, she identifies him as that's the guy that tried to pick me up.
Right.
Back when I made the complaint.
So that was on still on the 22nd?
That was on the 22nd,
so yeah. He tried to abduct two women, yeah. Two girls.
Yeah, at this point, right? Because 14 and 15, so he's coming down on age, which is weird.
And that is weird, right? Because we just mentioned he's targeting early 20s college students.
Yeah.
And he has a bad experience. And then he somehow switches to
young
teenage girls.
I think he thought, well, if I can't overpower a 20-year-old, let me drop down to a girl
14, 15,
where I can have a better chance of getting...
You might be right.
You know?
Yeah.
Maybe that's what he tries, and it doesn't work for him.
No, but it does make sense that because of frustration or whatever, he's going to pick an easier, what he feels to be an easier target.
Target, yeah.
So, but so both of those happened on the 22nd. And then, but again, the very next day on the 23rd,
mm-hmm.
A woman named Linda Saley, she's 22, out of Portland, she disappears from a shopping center. She's there trying to buy a gift for her boyfriend. And she's last seen walking out of a jewelry store at about 5:30. Her car is ultimately found in the parking garage of the shopping center. Now, what would come out later is that Jerry had posed as a police officer to gain Linda's trust and ultimately had strangled her to death.
So we've heard that before.
Yes.
The badge, the uniform.
Yep. We've heard that more than once, yeah. For sure.
I mean, back then, people probably fell for it a lot easier. Today, I mean, even if you're a real police officer,
well, that's true.
I think people are going to look at you like, I don't think so.
Yeah. I mean, police officers are you know, I feel bad for a lot of them, a lot of the good ones.
Sure.
But back then, I think people really trusted police officers.
Sure,
they really had a lot of respect for police officers. So, yeah, I agree with you that in back then, it would have been much easier to pose.
Yeah.
And gain somebody's trust. But it's at this point that the police are putting all of this together, right? You've got a number of college-aged women, and they start to think, hey, we've got a serial killer on our hands here. So because of this, Gibbs, I think you've got a lot of law enforcement agencies from various counties, various jurisdictions that are all coming together, and they're looking for a number of months into all different types of leads on these missing women. Basically, it's this guy out fishing by himself, and he stumbles across a body. Now, he's on the Long Tom River, 12 miles south of Corvallis, and this is, what, May 10th? So it's really just a month, right, after Brudos kind of ramped up and went on this spree in a short period of time, that this fisherman finds the body. It's floating, you know, on the top of the water. He gets in his car. Again, no cell phones, right? Nothing like that. He's got to drive to the nearest gas station, find a payphone, and call the police. So sheriff's deputies, they book it out to the river, and they're taking a look at the body. And basically what they find is that the body's been tied using nylon cord, some copper wire, but it's been tied to an automobile transmission. Now, we know that's not a light piece of material.
There's some weight there.
So, you know, I'm kind of wondering now how he got, you know, I understand how you, I mean, dumping a body into a river, I think would be tough enough.
Right.
How do you get a body that is tied to a transmission, a very heavy transmission?
Yeah. In the water.
Into the water.
Right.
There's no way you're doing that over a bridge, right?
I wouldn't think so.
And maybe that's why, you know, it was reported that the body was floating near the surface of the water.
Yeah.
Because obviously he couldn't have got it in the deep part of the river.
So maybe he just thought if you get it in the shallow but kept her underneath,
yeah,
that eventually the water would do its...
Maybe rolled. I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm speculating now because I don't have all those details. But so they take the body out of the water, and they would later discover that this was Linda Salee. She's the one that disappeared from Portland from the shopping center, shopping for something for her boyfriend.
Right.
You know, my wife and I, we both use Rakuten when we shop online to help save money. My wife uses it more than I do because, well, let's face it, she shops more than I do. Rakuten is the most rewarding way to shop and save because members earn cash back on everything that they buy. Rakuten is a shopping platform that partners with over 3,500 stores across every category. You're already shopping at your favorite stores. Why not save while doing it? It really is a no-brainer. I use it for all my techie stuff at stores like Best Buy. My wife uses it at stores like Sephora and Macy. Best of all, membership is free and it's easy to sign up. It's very easy to use. Cashback rates change daily. So start all your shopping at Rakuten.com or get the Rakuten app to start saving today. Your cash back really adds up.
Do you ever feel like you're settling? For your foundation, that is. Maybelline's new Instant Age Rewind Eraser Foundation doesn't settle into fine lines and wrinkles. With SPF 20 and moisturizing Pro Vitamin B5, this foundation not only provides medium coverage and a natural finish, but also protects and nourishes your skin. And the best part? The blurring sponge tip applicator makes application a breeze. Say goodbye to cakey, uneven foundation, and hello to a flawless, radiant complexion. Try our new foundation today and see the difference for yourself at amazon.com/instant eraser foundation.
Now, like we said, we think the police have put a lot of this together, that there's somebody committing all of these. So because of that, I think it's clear that they believe there's going to be more bodies to search for.
Yeah.
In that same area. And so they start having the divers come out. They're dragging the river. And just a couple days later, they do find the body of Karen Sprinker. And it's found just, I mean, pretty close, like 50 feet.
Yeah.
From where they found Linda Salee's body.
It's tied down too.
Yeah. Well, and again, it is tied down with a car engine.
Which is, you know, even if it's one of the small Volkswagen ones, it's still, that's some weight.
I don't care what, you know.
Yeah.
It's not a lawnmower engine. This is a car engine.
Yeah.
You know, you usually need to hook it up and then use that hoist.
Right.
I mean, this guy's not walking around with this car.
Throw engine. It on your shoulder.
You know? Or he's some kind of Hercules.
Yeah, like me.
This is some part I can't figure out, though. How he's getting these women.
Well, it seems like he dumps them at the same spot on Tom's...
Long Tom River.
Yeah, Long Tom River. So I'm wondering if it, you know, he's driving his, if he has a truck or something that he drives back that way, you know, and backs it up.
Yeah. Just pushes it down like an embankment and it rolls. Yeah. It's got to be
something like that.
There's no way he's getting up on the bridge and lifting all this over.
Okay. I'm sure we got some mechanics that are listening and I'm sure they could tell us if they thought they could do that.
Well, I know for a fact I can't lift a car engine.
Yeah. I can.
So but
not with a body.
But not with a body on it.
Yeah.
So again, nylon cord is what he uses to tie the body to the engine. So Gibbs, both victims, Linda and Karen, they're found partially clothed, but there's a real big difference that they find when they start to examine Karen's body.
I mean, on her body, Jerry decided he wanted some souvenirs, so he cut off both her breasts. And at that point, when he did that, he stuffed the holes with some paper towels. And then I guess he had some bras out of his collection and put one of his favorite ones on her. So I guess he put that bra over where he cut the breast off to... I don't know, to hide the wounds or what. But
yeah, for what reason, I have no idea.
But again, it was one of the bras from his favorite collection that he had.
But that, because I was getting ready to ask, why put paper towels in there? But
that kind of makes sense if I think about it,
if
right?
You're going to put the bra over top.
Yeah.
It's almost like the paper towels are replacing the breasts that he cut off.
Yeah. You know, clearly he cut the breast off, put the bra on, but he stuffed the bra, the wounds, with the brown paper to give the look
of a full...
That she still had breasts.
Yes.
Because we know that he enjoyed having sex with the women after he's killed them.
Yeah, so I mean, it does come out that he was a necrophiliac.
Yeah.
I mean, he enjoyed...
Absolutely he did.
Not just the other fetish crazy stuff that we've talked about... But he actually had sex with the dead bodies.
He did.
And so if you start off thinking, well, that's crazy. Why would you cut the breasts? And then why would you stuff paper towels in there? But if you put it all together, now it's still crazy. Don't get me wrong.
It's definitely crazy.
But if I'm putting myself in his mind, which is scary, it does make sense, I'm sure, to him that he wants... a woman that looks like she has, you know...
Full breast. Yeah.
Before he has sex with this dead body.
Right.
But so then it goes back to why does he cut the breasts off? And we find out later that he actually takes the breasts,
mm-hmm.
dips them in some kind of resin or some kind of material,
right.
and actually makes paperweights out of them.
Yeah. I mean, who wouldn't want a breast paperweight?
I don't want a breast paperweight.
In your office. Well, how weird is that, man?
I don't think the people at work would appreciate that.
No, in today's world, you probably get in trouble.
Yeah.
So, for many reasons.
But anyway, so just, I mean, to me, that's like, it's sick, 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 another level of sick.
He's collecting feet off his victims, and he's putting them in high heels and storing in his freezer. Now he's got breast from his victims and making paperweights out of them.
Well, and he's turned to having sex with dead bodies. Which you can see really, the progression.
Yeah.
Right? It starts with fantasy. It starts with stealing objects from that women have worn.
Sure, underwear, bras, nylons.
To use for masturbation.
Yep.
But, and we've talked about this a lot, right? That can't be enough for some people forever.
Nope.
They have to go to the next level.
Right.
So eventually he commits, you know, a rape. And then eventually he commits murder, cutting off parts, you know, a foot, essentially.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, you really can see in Jerry Brudos the progression of what in some people could be a very harmless fascination / fetish that could go on forever like that.
Yeah.
And nobody would ever know about it. But that's not how his mind obviously works. He chose to keep ratcheting it up until eventually, you know, it led to murder and necrophilia and all of that. So obviously the police are investigating all of this. And at some point they're interviewing students at Oregon State University because obviously one of the victims went there. And it's at this point that they find out that some of the female students have been receiving phone calls from some unidentified man who claims to be a Vietnam vet looking for a date. So one of the students actually goes out with this unidentified caller on a date. I'm not sure why they would choose to do that, but they did. And this is May of 1969. And during the date, the man makes some very strange references. He talks about dead women found in the river. He talks about taking his date, who's with him, away and strangling her.
Oh.
So bad date.
Yeah.
You're not going to get a second date.
No.
By talking about strangling somebody on your first date. But because of this, she's freaked out. You know, the date ends or whatever, and she gets home. She calls the police. And she says, this, you know, very strange thing happened to me.
Right.
She is able to give the police a description of this man. And what police ask her to do is to get back in touch with them if the man calls back to set up a meeting or a second date. And, of course, Jerry does. We know it's Jerry. He contacts the girl a second time, and she immediately calls the police, but she sets up a date with him. Jerry comes to pick her up, and instead of finding his date,
Chris Hansen
pops out. No. The police are there waiting for him.
Yeah.
They interviewed Jerry, and they obviously are getting strong vibes from him, and they decide that they've got to investigate him further, that he is definitely a possible suspect in all this stuff that's gone down. So what happens at this time, Gibbs, is that one of the women that Brudos had attempted to abduct earlier is able to identify him.
Yeah, the 15-year-old.
And pick him out of a lineup. And because of that, that's what gives the police the ammunition to get a search warrant for his house. And they just find a treasure trove of stuff at his house, right? They find nylon rope, which is going to match the rope that was used to tie the bodies to the engine and the transmission. They find the photos that he had taken of the victims, some of his victims.
They also find some copper wire that was used. So, I mean, they're, like you said, Mike, they're building a case.
And I think a pretty easy case, right? Because you got photos of the victims.
Well, and you got photos of the victims and different stages.
Oh yeah.
This is not
a glamour shot from the mall. These are bad photos.
Yeah, he liked to take pictures of them while they were dying.
Yes.
When they were dead.
So I don't think there's any doubt that at this point the police have enough evidence to arrest Brudos. And they do try to serve him with a warrant, and he tries to take off on them to get away from them. Now, they got all this information and evidence for the warrant, but what they get the warrant for is not the murders. It's actually for the attempted abduction of the young girl that had occurred about a month before. Because of that, they're able to get him in and they're able to start the interrogation process. Now, one thing that I found very interesting is that at one point when Jerry is in jail, he calls Darcy. He's trying to convince her to burn some clothing and other evidence that they must not have found. And she's not having any of it.
She's not going to cooperate at all, will she?
No. You know, the other thing I found very interesting is that Brudos actually had friends, and friends that described him as a devoted family man. He didn't drink, he didn't smoke, and he didn't cuss. So he had that going for him.
Sure.
Now he dressed in drag and he killed people and raped them and cut their body parts off. But other than that,
he was a nice guy, huh?
He was a nice guy.
Yeah.
I just found that interesting and I think that is, you see that a lot, right? People are leading two separate, completely separate lives. They've got their, I'm a family man. You know, I go to work, I come home, take the kids to T-ball practice. I go to church, whatever it is.
Right.
So all their friends are seeing this person, but hidden underneath is the monster. And once the monster comes out, then they're doing and committing all these unbelievable
frog demon.
The frog demon comes out.
Right.
It's that part always fascinates me, how people can lead that type of double life to the point that their friends are coming forward saying there is no possible way that this person could have
done that.
Could have done all right. That. I've known them for 20 years.
Just because Gibby has a K-bar and travels the country.
Right.
There's no way that Gibby could
have. I'd have to stand up for you and say, there is no way that that Gibby used that K-bar knife. I don't care if his serial number matches the receipt that you found.
Yeah.
I don't care.
Wasn't him.
There's no way.
I know that picture looks like him.
It was not him on that video.
It's not him.
So in early June. Now, keep in mind, all of this is happening very quickly.
Right.
Right? March, April, May, June. Very quickly.
Yes, when the court system worked well.
So in early June, investigators are able to get Jerry to confess. And he confesses to the two murders of the women that they just discovered the bodies of.
Right.
Right? So that's Karen and Linda. But he also goes on to confess to the murder of Linda Slauson. That was the woman that was selling the encyclopedias.
Right.
And also to Jan Whitney.
Yeah, his first known victim.
Well, maybe. She's one of the ones we talked about in the very beginning. Right. We didn't actually call her a victim. We just said she went missing. There was a couple of people. Stephanie Vico was the other one. Now, I don't think he confesses to her. But again, we talk about this too, right? Just because, you know, how many more could there be? You never really know.
You don't know. More than they find and more that he admits to. It that way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, no doubt. But you talked about things moving quickly back then. So within a week, they make the big announcement that Jerome Brudos, 30 years old, he's been charged with 4 counts of first-degree murder in those 4 murders that he confessed to. But then the grand jury meets on June 4th, and they only indict him on 1 count of first-degree murder, and that's the death of Karen Sprinker. So to that charge, Brudo pleads not guilty, by reason of insanity.
Mm-hmm.
And it's at this point they start testing him. Several psychiatrists start testing Jerry. And they actually say he has an above average IQ and cognition. And all of them across the board say that he's not criminally insane. He knows what he's doing. He knew what he did was wrong.
Right.
He just didn't give a shit.
But they still diagnose him with some labels.
Oh, he's got labels, yeah. Antisocial personality. Again, this fetishism.
Right.
That's a hard word to say, by the way. Transvestitism. Exhibitionism. Voyeurism. And I think the one that they settle on that is really damning is sadism, mm-hmm. right? He's a sadist. He's a sexual sadist. There's right. no doubt about that. Yeah. You know, but during, as this time, you know, they're still investigating him. The evidence continues to mount and they ultimately charge him with 3 counts of first degree murder. And that's for Jan Whitney, Linda Saylee, and Karen Sprinker. And at this point, he decides to take back his not guilty by reason of insanity plea, and he pleads guilty. And this is what, you talked about things moving fast. That very same day, he's sentenced to 3 consecutive life sentences.
Which is good.
That day that he pleads guilty.
Yeah.
I mean, it's wrapped up, done, over. Now, there is, and the reason for that is because there's no death penalty in Oregon, right? I assume if there was, he would have been.
I would think he would have been placed on that.
Yeah. Now, the one thing we said 3, and that's because he was not charged with the murder of Linda Slauson because they never did find her body. My assumption with that, Gibbs, and I don't know what you think, is that they had 3 already. They knew that they had him.
Yeah, he was going to go to prison and never come back
and
out.
And he was never going to get out. So right. I kind of hate that for the family of Linda Slauson, but I'm sure they have closure. I'm sure they know he did it.
Yeah, I think they're glad he rotted away in prison.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm sure they wish they had the body to bury. But
so we say it's all wrapped up. It's got a nice bow on it. But that doesn't stop the investigation.
Mm-mm.
Because there were a total of 12 women that went missing in and around the area where he lived during the time before he was arrested. So that investigation kept going. And this is where things kind of got a little crazy because a neighbor of the Brudos's, am I saying that right?
Sure.
I'm asking you.
I know.
No. But a neighbor implicates Darcy, his wife, in one of the murders, claiming that Darcy helped Jerry carry the body out of the garage.
Okay.
Now, this goes back to what you and I were saying. How is somebody... Now, I don't know how much help Darcy would be.
Right.
Because in my mind, whether you're talking about an engine or something like that, it would take multiple men. Yeah. Or a hoist.
Yeah.
Like your theory was, if you can hoist it into the bed of the truck, maybe you can push it out and let it roll. I don't think your wife's going to be able to help you carry an engine.
No, and this goes back to, I mean, we've had other cases where you would have thought the wife would have known, right? I mean, you can go back to, the mass murderer guy in Indiana, where he hit the nightclubs.
Herb Baumeister.
You would have thought his wife, with all those bodies buried in the backyard, and to the fact that her son actually brought some bones to her.
A skull or something.
And she just thought it was something from a long time, right? I mean,
yeah.
So you know, does the wife really know? I don't know.
I think that's a question that you have in a lot of these cases.
Sure. How do you not know if he's got a frozen foot and a breast for a paperweight, but maybe she just never goes in.
Maybe he does all the cooking. Maybe he's got the freezer locked. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. Who knows?
But, you know, ultimately Darcy is charged with aiding and abetting first degree murder. And this is for Karen Sprinker.
Mm-hmm.
They have a trial. She testifies, but she is found not guilty.
Sure. Yeah. She claims she had no involvement.
Yep. And the jury believed that.
Yep.
Now, she does divorce Jerry. Shocker.
Yeah, smart move.
She changes her name, which I don't blame her.
Yeah.
And moves on with her life.
Probably one of the smartest things she did during that time. It's also said that she wouldn't let her kids go see her father.
Or even write to
their him. Father. Or write to them.
Yeah. Yeah. I heard, yeah, I had that too.
Yeah.
Wouldn't even let him, wouldn't even let them write a letter to him.
Right.
Let alone go see him.
Yeah, he didn't deserve it, that's for sure.
No, I don't blame her one bit. So we have to talk about Jerry's time in prison.
Yeah.
Because there's some interesting stuff here.
If it's what I'm thinking you're going to say, it's definitely bizarre.
And normally we don't talk about this part, but we have to because it's said that Jerry Brudos had piles and piles of women's shoe catalogs in his cell. Somehow he was writing to all these companies, basically asking them to send their catalogs to him. And in the letter, he was putting that these catalogs were his substitute for pornography.
Yeah.
He's basically telling them, hey, I need these catalogs.
Yeah.
This is what I use.
Yeah. It's my masturbation material.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I thought that was crazy that they actually would send him.
Here's your Sears catalog or yeah. JCPenney's or whatever it was back in the day. Woolworths.
Now, as most people, he pled guilty, but he lodged appeal after appeal. And one of the reasons he used was that one of the photographs taken of him with one of the victim's corpses.
Okay.
Should not have been enough to prove his guilt. Because the reason is, he's saying, that that's not the body of one of the people that he was convicted of killing. So he's not saying, I didn't pose with a dead body.
Yeah.
He's just saying,
it was the wrong body.
It wasn't one of the three or four people, the three people that you convicted me on. So the question is, who was it then? Somebody else that we didn't know you killed? But Jerry had a lot of trouble in prison. You know, he was beaten regularly by inmates, which I don't think anybody's going to lose a whole lot of sleep over.
No.
The most interesting one, I guess, is in 1970, it was said that he was treated for rectal bleeding that was classified as being caused by hemorrhoids or, and I'm using air quotes,
yeah,
other. And I think we know what that other is.
I think we do.
And again,
don't feel bad for him.
I don't feel bad for him either. This was a bad guy. He hurt women. He killed women. You know, I'm not condoning that, but I'm also at the same time, I'm not feeling real bad for Jerry Brudos. Yeah,
payback's a bitch.
It is. So we mentioned that Jerry got three life sentences, but somehow he was up for parole. In 1995, the parole board voted to ban him from ever getting parole. What I didn't understand is that it was said that even though he was banned from ever getting parole, they were going to allow him to interview with the board every 2 years. None of that made sense to me.
Mm-mm.
They're basically saying you're never going to get out, but we're going to let you plead your case every 2 years.
Okay.
So in 99, he goes up for parole. That's what I'm calling it. He's doing this interview. He's 60 years old. They don't give it to him. They've already said he's not going to get it. Why go through the motion? And the parole board comes out and they basically say to the victims' families, we're promising you Jerry will never be set free. At one of these parole interviews, which happened every 2 years, you know, obviously they're asking him questions. And one of the questions was, you know, Jerry, why did you commit these torturous murders that put you in prison? He offered no response other than to say that this hearing was not the right forum for me to talk about it.
Yeah.
He didn't want to talk about it.
He used some lame excuse that he didn't want it to get out to the local press of what he said. And then get out to the victims' families, things like that. So that was his excuse.
So we get to the end. Eventually, Brutos dies in prison on March 28th, 2006. And he dies from liver cancer. And I guess the only interesting thing about it was that at the time, he had spent the most time in jail or prison of any inmate in the Oregon Department of Corrections.
Okay.
So he'd been in for 37 years, 1969 to 2006 when he died.
He was a record holder, huh?
Yeah. Maybe somebody's passed him by now.
I imagine so. Yeah.
In 2006, he had that going for him. But he was dead. So.
But he was dead. Yeah.
And that's the strange and crazy story of Jerry Brutos.
Yeah. Weird guy, man. Weird guy.
That's an understatement of the year. Jerry Brutos, weird guy.
Weird guy.
All right. That's it for this episode of True Crime All the Time. For Mike.
And Gibby.
Stay safe and keep your own time ticking. Tell everybody about a game that I've been playing recently called Two Dots. You know, primarily Two Dots is a puzzle-based game. You have to connect at least two dots of the same color to make a move. And then those connected dots are removed from the game area, and the dots above them drop down until they hit other dots or the floor beneath. But there's a variety of game modes. There's this really cool one called Scavenger Hunt, which is a really relaxing hidden object game. There's different levels to the game that are grouped into worlds, and it's very satisfying to move up. There's over 5,000 unique puzzles and fun levels. And with all the different gameplay modes, it really makes the gaming experience unique and exciting with every single puzzle. The visuals are amazing, and the in-game music I found to be very soothing. You can even challenge your friends on Facebook to make it competitive, link up and see how your dot skills match up. And best of all, it's free to download, and you don't need Wi-Fi to play it. You can play it offline as well. Think you have what it takes to solve some fun puzzles? Download Two Dots now for free on Android or iOS.